Welcome to the Cognitive Rampage. I'm Adam Lowry, and these are the issues.
Hope everybody's doing okay this morning. This afternoon, sorry. Love my coffee. I'm going to cover some new research that is out. And it's actually not new research as far as the idea, but there's some new research has emerged on how it works. I know a few people, you may have heard about magnetic treatment for depression or brain issues. I know that's not new news to many people, but how it works is becoming more clear. What we don't know or haven't known is exactly why we get positive effects from the magnetic treatment. All right. Scientists show how magnetic pulse changed the brain in treatment for depression with patients. I actually read about this when they were doing a trial of it, at the University of Florida. And they were showing some tremendous results with the use of the transcranial magnet stimulation, or TMS, is how they refer to it here as well. Now, it's similarly close to electrocompulsive therapy. Now, electroshock therapy, whatever you want to call it, it too has had has shown some benefits with working with depression. The issues with it is it doesn't last, and sometimes it can become less and less effective over time. And we're also not exactly sure of all the damage it could possibly be causing. So when they're shocking the brain like that, it resets it or something like that. And they have shown some benefits with depression, etc., with the ECT. Well, TMS obviously is a little less shocking. Bad pun. All right. Well, it's a little less invasive, but it's showing signs of working and helping with severely depressed patients. Transcranial magnet stimulation works by applying the magnetic pulse to the front of the brain of depressed patients. It's a reset to the brain, but easier because it does not require any anesthetic, and it has few side effects, unlike shocking the shit out of yourself. Because of this, increasingly it's being used in treatment a lot more. These are other things I covered. In a placebo-controlled study, research from the University of Nottingham applied MRI-guided target bursts of magnetic pulses to the prefrontal cortex of the brain of 27 healthy volunteers. Now, that's not a whole lot of volunteers. It's not a whole lot in the study, but at least it's expanding. It's the first time that an MRI-guided TMS pulses have been used to look at the changes in the individual brain and how the network and the chemistry is functioning. By using the same MRI scanner, they were able to measure the subtle functional changes in the brain caused by the magnetic pulses. They were also able to measure the changes in the brain chemistry using magnetic resonance spectroscopy. There we go. Let's see, Dr. Serena Iwabuchi from Nottingham said, we found that one session of TMS modifies the connectivity of large-scale brain networks, particularly the right insula, which is the key area for depression. We also found that TMS alters concentrations of neurotransmitters such as GABA, which are considered important for the development of depression. The results mean that for the first time, we have an understanding of the direct effects of TMS has on the brain. If we can see the change caused by the treatment, then the treatment can get smarter. It also means that the treatment will be able to be better tailored to an individual's brain. Or in other words, it could be a personalized treatment for depression. Look at that. No pills, just some magnets on the brain. Now, we may learn later in life that this is completely destructive to your life and functioning. We don't know. That's still out there. This study was rather small in Nottingham, but the work presented in Nottingham describes a healthy control study, at least. It's shown that personalized TMS treatment is possible and does indeed lead to brain changes. The next step is to use it as a practical treatment for patients with depression in a clinical trial setting. And in fact, this trial, they're already underway with a larger trial, a clinical trial in Nottingham. Okay, Robin Hood. These are the first steps in personalizing this treatment. Let's see, committing from the ECM professor from Oxford said, all right, so a professor from Oxford, Catherine Harmer. These findings are an exciting step in understanding how targeting the brain directly with magnetic stimulation may exert beneficial effects in treatment of depression. TMS techniques are still evolving and their efficiency of treating depression remains to be fully validated and optimized. This kind of experimental medicine, it's essential for improved personalization treatment. Okay, good. They're saying the same things I'm essentially saying, is that at least they're thinking out of the box. And looking at other ways. I believe there's a few major influences in our life that influence who we are, what we are in the now, and what we perceive ourselves to be. Those, I believe, are your beliefs of influence, your genetic makeup and implications, as well as your brain functioning, treatment, makeup, the chemicals, what it's been through, etc. Your nutrition, what you're eating and what you're doing daily. That would speak to the environmental influence, meaning internal and external environments, how you talk to yourself inside, and what environments you place yourself in. I think those are the most influential in making up who we are in the moment and what we are and what we will be. So as treatment expands on the brain and what areas do what in the brain, how we can adjust and affect the brain by certain treatments, I mean, the brain could hold the answer to most of the questions we have left, as well as the genetic implications of any kind of treatment. I think the genetic implication may be in preventative, to where we can adjust genes or remove genes, etc., that potentially cause illnesses or depression or whatever is, or even medical illnesses. So I think the genetic implication works on a preventative scale and possibly on a healing scale later too, as we regenerate genes and be able to modify and exchange them. But we're a little ways off, not too far from that though. But the brain functioning itself, I think, is at the forefront of what answers a lot of questions or could. Now, all right, I'm going to present. I've been working on this little theory with myself, but anyway, as well as a bunch of other people believe this too. But what if the brain is not an originator of thought? What if the brain more or less works like a receiver? Let's say you're holding an AM/FM radio, right? And it has its little antenna on it, right? And we throw that onto the ground. Now, beforehand, it worked and it picked up signals as we tuned it into whatever channel or signal it is we wanted it to pick up on. Now, assume we smash this receiver radio onto the ground, and now, set on the same station it was prior, it now picks up something totally different. The receiver, if you will, is picking up random signals. Sometimes our radio will pick up things that are on walkie-talkies or on TV or even a conversation nearby. Now, what if, since it's been hard-pressed to find an original thought, watch the movie Beautiful Mind for that reference, but what if the brain is more or less acting as a receiver, like the antenna on that radio, and picking up frequencies and picking up certain existence or consciousness or whatever it is you want to call it, waves, thoughts, moments? Hell, maybe there's waves and vibrations that are so small that we haven't been able to pick them up. What if the thoughts that we have are actually waves or vibrations that we can send somehow? But what if they're on such a small and fast scale that we've yet to be able to see them or slow them down enough to be able to catch them? Who knows? But what if, so imagine somebody then injures their brain, gets a traumatic brain injury somehow, It's like throwing the receiver on the ground. Well, what happens? Honestly, they don't know many times. They know certain areas that could be damaged in the brain could possibly affect this, but it becomes a lot of perhaps and could be's and maybe's when it comes to traumatic brain injury. Well, it's kind of that way with the radio and the receiver. When you smash it and you pick it up, who knows what signal you're going to pick up and from where? So maybe, you know, that notion that the brain is more of a receiver and a filter of information as opposed to the generator of information is something to think about. So when we look at a treatment like TMS or this magnetic treatment where we're applying electromagnets to the brain and the frontal cortex, trying to affect certain areas of the brain with this pull, hey, who knows? Who knows? If they're showing good responses right now and some good results from using it, then I think that's great. To say it's safer than everything else, sure, we can say that now in the long run. It's safer than surgery, I assume. It looks to show to be safer than results of long-term use of antidepressants, or at least a risk. I didn't read anything about someone trying TMS and then wanting to kill themselves after 3 days of being on TMS. Maybe that's a long-term effect. We're yet to see that. But I do know taking antidepressants, they have to tell you, you may want to kill yourself. That's true. And, you know, while I'm on antidepressants are a guessing game a lot of times, people. And I don't think a lot of people understand that. And even the doctors themselves that are prescribing these things for you aren't quite sure that it'll work either. This is why they say, let's try a few. But think about if you try a medication that is meant to affect chemical balances in your brain and you put them all out of whack. And who knows how you're feeling? Let's say the antidepressant doesn't work for you. What's the shelf life? And a lot of them, meaning how long before your brain returns back to baseline? And a lot of antidepressants vary from 2 weeks to 6 months before they say you return to baseline. But who knows if you really do or how long you really do? Because I'd like to see how they exactly test for the amount of serotonin and dopamine in your brain. So they start you off on this antidepressant. It starts you on some ups and downs. Maybe it does or doesn't work. Then you stop taking that one. Then you take another one. You see how the guessing game of antidepressants can throw your chemical makeup or chemical balances into a fucking crapshoot to where it's so far from where you really are that getting back there can be hell. It's why starting antidepressants is a big deal, which is why I wonder why all you have to do is go see your physician for 2 or 3 minutes and tell him you've been depressed. He'll ask you a range of time. You know, has it been 2 weeks to 6 months? Have you, you know, whatever it is. Now, this isn't every practitioner, obviously, but and then within that 3 to 5 minute time of talking to you, they essentially go, here, try these antidepressants. This ought to make your life better. When really what you could be dealing with is just situational. If it is long-term, I still don't urge going at the antidepressants. I would urge you at this point to try TMS. I would urge you more at this time to try the electromagnetic stimulation before you go to antidepressants. I mean, that's where I stand on a lot of treatments, especially mental health. Is I don't believe pills should be the first line of defense in mental health whatsoever. I think these become extenuating circumstances later in life or with the development of some major dysfunction in behavior and thought. But I don't think it should be the first line of defense. Antidepressants, painkillers, any of that. There's things that we can do that will affect your life as a whole. If you go back to those main influencers I was talking about and work in those areas, as well as, you know, and rather than all of them, because look, a lot of us don't have the money to do genetic testing and you know, figure out our genome pattern, et cetera. Many of us don't have the funds to see an endocrinologist and go beyond the levels of testing that insurance won't pay for, which insurance doesn't pay for most of the testings you need to go beyond the basic levels and move into finding preventative numbers as opposed to doing testing just when something's wrong. You know, a lot of people can't afford that. So all they are left with is essentially their mind, body, and belief. This is all you really have to work with. Otherwise, it's to the pills and synthetics and antidepressants. So when I read things like TMS with the magnetic stimulation, this appears to be like it shouldn't be that expensive to apply this kind of treatment, like the Hep C shot that can cure it, that's $84,000. But you know, when something like this starts to come out, these are big deals. You know, they're already showing signs with, to finish my point, a lot of those people only have their mind, body, and belief to work with rather than all of the expensive, wonderful things that science can offer. And so before we go right to the antidepressants or anything like that, we can do things that affect what we believe. We can start changing our dialogue and how we talk to ourselves to change our feelings about certain things. We can change our environments. We can change the activities we choose to do. We can structure our lives more purposefully to hopefully maybe reveal some spiritual and purposeful implications in our life. There's ways to go about treating depression, anxiety, addiction, etc., that doesn't require pills, that doesn't require synthetic dice rolls, because that's what I'm going to call it. You really roll the dice when you start taking antidepressants, when you start fucking with the natural chemical makeup of your brain and body by introducing synthetics or changes that naturally wouldn't be there. But speaking to where I was talking about before, you know, antidepressants, they're making tons of money on these things. You see the commercials every damn day. So, and they list what the essentially every symptom everybody has experienced at least once in life, hoping they get you on the one. Well, outside of antidepressants, I'll go a little farther and briefly talk to you about what's happening with treating depression and anxiety with psychedelic medication or psychedelic substitution. Psilocybin is the one I'll stick to. There's various strains of psilocybin, I think 160 something, I don't know, somebody would correct me, but there's tons of different psilocybin strains. And what's happening is people are microdosing with psychedelics and replacing the antidepressant. Now this is done with professionals, etc., but on a brief explanation, there's certain levels that you'll reach in a psychedelic use or treatment, you know, all the way up to very intense visuals, etc. Well, for basic math and easy explanation, I'll explain microdosing. Now, first off, it's pretty unaware to me that people haven't truly died off of psychedelics as opposed to maybe an LSD user years ago when they confused the story about a man leaping to his death, etc. But alcohol killed more than that last night, etc. So I'll stop there. And mind you, Tylenol kills people, okay? 34 Tylenol fucking kills somebody, but I don't see anybody running to pull that shit off the shelves. Too much sugar kills people. Too much salt kills people. Alcohol kills people, like I said, every day. So if there's one or two occurrences, as tragic as they are with the use of psychedelics, the fact that it's 1/80th most of the other products that are legal, then it's something that needs to just continue to be worked on. But anyway, so at certain levels of dosing of psychedelics, you can reach stages of intense visuals, auditory, et cetera, even. Now, let's, for example's sake, assume that a 7-gram dose of a Colombiana psilocybin mushroom is the full-on dose of a veteran. Now, if you take that and you take 2 or 3 grams off of that, you obviously are going to reduce the intense visuals that come with that experience, and you're going to reduce that down. And further, you reduce the dosage, the less intense the, I could call them the visuals and auditory, and the less intense it obviously gets. So now let's imagine if 7 grams is a full dose of this Colombiana psilocybin, and you're looking at a 7 to 8 to 10 hour, depends on how, even 4 hours, depends on how often you use this type of treatment, but the effects become less and less. Now, let's say I microdose this down to a 200 milligram dose, okay, less than a gram even, and we dose this over one day, and then we dose it the next day. See, the thing with psychedelics, the reason they're also non-addictive, in case you people didn't know that are listening and yelling at me, psychedelics are non-addictive. So if we take a full dose, 7 grams on a Monday, we take 7 grams on a Tuesday, we don't get the same effect. We take a 7 gram on Wednesday, more than likely we don't have any effect. It's like the brain just shuts it off, like it doesn't work anymore. So unless you like the taste of those nasty chewy mushrooms, addiction is far off. So antidepressants now, different ball game. People become hooked to these antidepressants mentally, pseudo-like, and also without them, their chemicals start to drop off and you get baseline and you can't find the baseline. And so your dopamine levels are up, your serotonin levels are down, you forget to take a pill for 2 days, right? You can throw yourself into spins. Not to mention that if you're bipolar and you're taking antidepressant, your life just got worse. Watch my interview with Dr. Lewis Brodsky, a bipolar specialist under my health science interviews. He talks about how many people see physicians talking of depressed symptoms. They're given antidepressants. And truly, if someone's bipolar, within 2 or 3 days of taking an antidepressant, they feel like God, like everything has gotten better and amazing. Well, that's a surefire symptom that in a couple days or so, the person is going to drop and nosedive dramatically. And more than likely, they're dealing with a bipolar-ish type symptom as opposed to a full depression symptom. So those of you that take an antidepressant that happens to you, be careful, right? Because you'll actually begin to cycle faster if you're bipolar and take an antidepressant. Although 75% of the people, I'm throwing that out there, are thrown an antidepressant right away by the physician because of the lack of time spent with them. So back up to using the psychedelics for microdosing. There's studies out there that have shown that people that stopped antidepressants were taking 200 milligram microdoses of psychedelic supplementation. Instead, would take one Monday, take a bit Tuesday, nothing on Wednesday, take again on Thursday, and they would keep this pattern up as to keep its effectiveness up. And after the review, one of the biggest response they got from most people in the study was, I believe verbatim even, was, I was able to deal with annoying people better. So there's some sort of promise there. And if that micro dosing itself, and being that it's natural, that the mushrooms and psilocybins are natural herbs and plants, not synthetic makeups of antidepressants, the risk is far less. You're not going to have a risk of suicide or the 10-minute list of possible side effects they're going to read you at the end of a depression commercial that the doctor's going to recite to you after he writes you a prescription for one. I know this was originally about electromagnetic stimulation for depression, but that just leads me to my other topics about all the other exciting out-of-the-box treatments that are on the rise, like the one I talked about the other day with the high-pitched noises by putting headphones on and running certain levels of frequencies in one ear and the opposite one on the right is showing amazing outcomes for those dealing with PTSD. I think the rise of PTSD due to the wars, et cetera, overseas, and is pushing the field to have to expand into other possibilities. I think, you know, the rise of addiction, the rise of prescription addiction, I should say, is also coming from the need for the massive growing need of everyone needing help of some level. But I think we have to be careful, because in our rush to find help synthetically, we're actually creating more issues for people. We're creating that state of what I'm calling chemical incarceration. People become incarcerated to the pills that they're taking. They become incarcerated to their medical diagnosis and can't ever seem to break free. Maybe it's set up that way. But anything that reaches outside of synthetic application or chemical incarceration, I'm going to talk about on the issues, whether that's electromagnetic stimulation, whether that's microdosing of psilocybin, whether that's high-pitched frequency noises to treat PTSD, all different and new out-of-the-box research that's starting to appear to treat these epidemics, I'm going to talk about on the issues. I'm also going to talk about global issues, like I posted the other day, talking about the issues with palm oil affecting our ability to be able to find new antibiotics and making our rainforest disappear, our oxygen levels dissipate, orangutans disappear, and how I link that to 80% of the bacteria or antibiotics that we actually buy go into our meats and not our people, and are actually causing people to be obese, etc., and more illnesses in the development of superbugs. But either way, that's what I'm going to be talking about on the issues. I'm going to be here every Thursday at noon. So join the tribe, go to adamlowry.com, sign up with your email for the tribe, and you'll get a direct email every Thursday or a link that you can click on that will allow you to join these conversations as it expands. But till then, hope you enjoyed. These have been the issues on the Cognitive Rampage with Adam Lowry.